All right, diving into the Gospel of Mark today. And, I gotta say, I think starting with the prologue is a really smart move. Like the first time I read it, I was kind of blown away by how much Mark just crams into those first 13 verses.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's like a highlight reel of everything that makes this gospel, unique and different and just captivating.
Right.
And to help us sort of unpack it all, we've got, a real expert here. We've got biblical scholar Dr. Mark Jennings joining us.
Well, hey, it's great to be here. And it's true. Mark doesn't waste any time. You know, he sort of jumps right in, almost assuming you're already familiar with the story. It's like that fast-paced, almost like Cliff Notes style that makes him stand out.
Right.
You know, from the other gospel.
Yeah. It's like, hold on tight. This is going to be a wild ride.
Yeah.
And speaking of wild, the first character we meet is John the Baptist out there in the wilderness. Now, he's usually known as, the guy who baptized Jesus. But Mark seems to want us to know that he was a major figure in his own right.
Absolutely. I mean, John was a bit of a rock star. He's drawing these huge crowds. He's even catching the attention of folks like, the Apostle Paul years later. But it's fascinating how Mark, he uses John to connect Jesus to those, ancient prophecies, right?
Right.
Those prophecies from the Old Testament.
You mean those verses in Isaiah about the voice crying out in the wilderness?
Exactly. But it goes even deeper than that. Mark, he sort of sprinkles in these hints from Exodus and Malachi, like he's weaving together this grand tapestry of God's plan, right? It's unfolding across history.
Okay. I'm intrigued. What kind of hints are we talking about?
Well, you take Malachi, for example. The original text, it says, prepare my way, right? Meaning prepare the way for God. But in Mark's version, it becomes prepare your way, directly linking that preparation to Jesus. Mm. It's a subtle shift, but it suggests that Jesus, he's the culmination of God's plan.
Wow, that's some serious biblical wordplay. I never even noticed that before.
Right, it's easy to miss. But these, these little details, they tell us a lot about how Mark wants us to understand Jesus. He's not just some prophet or teacher. He's the one who embodies God's presence and purpose.
That's a huge statement.
It is.
And speaking of huge statements, let's talk about John's baptism. I always thought of it as sort of a symbolic ritual. But, Jennings, he suggests it was a pretty intense experience of judgment and repentance.
Yeah.
Like, serious stuff.
You're right. It wasn't just, a quick dip in the river. I think about it, John's message. It was all about confronting people with their shortcomings, with the coming judgment. So going under that water, it would have been a way of, acting that out, acknowledging their need for God's grace.
Yeah.
And forgiveness.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. It sets the stage for something truly radical to happen. And then, of course, we have Jesus's baptism. The heavens are ripped open, not just open, mind you, ripped open.
Right.
And God himself speaks. I mean, talk about a dramatic entrance.
Yeah, it's cinematic. And that word ripped, it's key here. It's the Greek word schism, which literally means a split or a division. It's the same word Mark uses later on to describe the tearing of the temple veil at Jesus' death.
Oh, wow. So he's deliberately drawing a parallel between those two events.
Absolutely. And if you think about what the temple veil represented, that barrier between the Holy of Holies and the rest of the world, the tearing symbolizes that, access to God is now wide open.
Right.
The ripped heavens at Jesus' baptism, they reinforce that, right? It's like this cosmic shift, the new era in the relationship between humanity and the divine.
I'm starting to see how carefully Mark chooses his words and images. Like, nothing's accidental here.
Right.
And speaking of deliberate choices, I love how Mark, he immediately highlights Jesus's authority. It's like he's saying, listen up, this is someone you need to pay attention to.
Right. Even before Jesus performs a single miracle, John the Baptist, he declares him to be the stronger one. It sets the stage for Mark's focus on Jesus's power and authority.
And then, bam, the Spirit sends Jesus straight into the wilderness, right, to face temptation head on. It's interesting that the first adversary Jesus encounters, it isn't some human opponent. It's Satan himself.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Mark is saying, look, this is the ultimate showdown, folks, the cosmic battle between good and evil. And then within this scene, we get another, kind of a fascinating detail. The wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're there with Jesus in the wilderness, but they don't pose any threat to him.
Okay. That's strange, but also kind of beautiful. What's the significance of that, do you think?
Well, it could be a subtle hint of a return to the harmony of Eden, with Jesus as the second Adam, restoring that broken relationship between humanity and nature.
Wow. Never thought of it that way. That's amazing. But we're just scratching the surface here. It's incredible how much Mark packs into just these first few verses, setting the stage for everything that's to come.
You know, it's remarkable how Mark uses almost the same number of verses to describe just one day in Capernaum as he did for that whole prologue we just explored. It's like he's hitting the zoom button, you know, focusing our attention on this one pivotal moment.
Yeah. It's like he's saying, okay, now things are about to get really interesting. So set the scene for us. Where are we? Who are the players?
Okay, so picture this. It's the Sabbath, and we're in Capernaum, this bustling town on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus, he walks into the synagogue and starts teaching. But here's the thing. The people are completely blown away because he's not teaching like scribes they're used to. There's something different about him, something captivating.
You mean there's that authority again?
Exactly. Mark, he wants us to understand that Jesus, he isn't just another, you know, religious teacher spouting off memorized interpretations. He speaks with a power and authenticity that just cuts right through the noise. And then, as if to prove his point, a man possessed by an unclean spirit, he bursts onto the scene.
Okay, now we're talking. What happens next? This sounds intense.
Well, this unclean spirit, get this, it actually recognizes Jesus. It cries out, asking him what he wants with them. It's a chilling moment because it shows that even demonic forces are aware of who Jesus really is.
So we have another confession of Jesus's power, but this time it's coming from, you know, a source of darkness, not from God himself, like at the baptism. That's a pretty stark contrast.
It is. And Jesus doesn't hesitate. He rebukes the spirit, silences it, and then casts it out of the man. And the people, they're just utterly astounded. Can you imagine like witnessing something like that?
Oh, seriously. It must have been mind-blowing. It's interesting how Mark, he keeps drawing attention to the people's reactions. Their astonishment really underscores how radical and unexpected Jesus's actions are.
Yeah, their reactions are key because they mirror that central question that Mark is raising. You know, who is this Jesus?
Right.
Who speaks with such authority and commands even unclean spirits? The mystery is deepening.
You're right. It's like Mark is pulling us deeper into the story, making us grapple with those same questions. So after this dramatic exorcism, what happens next in this jam-packed day?
Well, Jesus leaves the synagogue and heads to Simon Peter's house with James and John. Simon's mother-in-law, she's sick with a fever, and they tell Jesus about her.
Ah, so we're moving from like a public display of power to a more private act of healing. What's interesting is that we see both sides of Jesus's ministry, the grand pronouncements and the intimate moments of compassion.
That's a great observation. It shows, you know, the breadth of his reach, and I mean, it makes him even more relatable, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. So how does this healing unfold?
Well, Jesus goes to the woman, takes her hand, lifts her up, and get this, the fever leaves her immediately, and she starts serving them.
Wait, serving them? That's an interesting detail. What's the significance of that?
Well, you know, it could be a simple way of showing that she's been restored to full health, like physically and socially. But remember how we talked about Mark weaving in those subtle hints? Well, this could also be foreshadowing a major theme that will develop, the call to discipleship. It's like she's embodying that idea of following Jesus and serving others.
Okay. I'm starting to see how Mark is connecting these seemingly small details to create a richer, kind of a tapestry of meaning. He's like a master storyteller. He's building suspense and revealing these deeper truths along the way. But hold on. This action-packed day isn't over yet, right?
Not even close. As evening falls, word spreads and people bring all the sick and demon-possessed to Simon's house. It's a scene of, like, controlled chaos. The whole town's gathered at the door, desperate for Jesus's touch.
It's like a scene from a movie, you know, you can almost feel the energy and desperation in the air. But amidst all this, what stands out to you?
It's crucial that Mark emphasizes the sheer volume of people seeking Jesus's help. He's not just healing a select few, he's extending his compassion and power to the whole community.
Yeah, it really reinforces that image of Jesus as someone who breaks down barriers and reaches out to the marginalized and suffering, doesn't it?
Precisely. And remember how Mark loves to emphasize contrasts. Well, amidst this, you know, this whirlwind of activity, he tells us that Jesus intentionally seeks solitude. Very early the next morning, while it's still dark, Jesus slips away to a solitary place to pray.
That's a powerful detail. Why do you think that's important?
It shows that even though Jesus is, you know, fully immersed in his ministry, he also prioritizes his connection with God. You know, prayer is his source of strength and guidance, even for someone who is divine.
That's a good reminder for all of us, isn't it? Even when we're feeling overwhelmed or pulled in a million directions, taking time for quiet reflection and connection with something bigger than ourselves, it's essential.
Couldn't have said it better myself. But as you might expect, Jesus' moment of solitude, it's interrupted. Simon and the others come looking for him, seeing that everyone is searching for him. The crowds just can't get enough.
It's almost like he can't escape his destiny, can he?
Right.
The people are drawn to his healing touch, his words, his presence. What does he do?
Well, this is a turning point. Jesus says to them, "Let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come."
Ah. So he's making it clear that his mission is about more than just healing people. It's about proclaiming a message, spreading the good news of God's kingdom. He's on the move.
Exactly. And from that point on, we see Jesus traveling throughout Galilee, preaching in synagogues, driving out demons, embodying that authority we talked about earlier.
It's incredible how much has already happened in just the first chapter of Mark's gospel. We've gone from John the Baptist preparing the way, to Jesus's dramatic baptism and confrontation with Satan, to those incredible scenes of healing and teaching. It's like a crash course in the essence of Jesus's ministry.
And what's remarkable is how Mark has woven together these events to create such a compelling portrait of Jesus. We see his authority, his compassion, his connection to those ancient prophecies, and his unwavering commitment to his mission. It's all there right from the start.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into Mark's gospel, and it's amazing how much he packs into just one chapter. From John the Baptist, you know, setting the stage, to Jesus's baptism and confrontation with Satan, to those incredible scenes of healing and teaching, it's clear that Mark, he really wants to grab our attention, like, right from the very first page.
Yeah, he definitely does. And you're right, there's a sense of urgency, a kind of momentum that propels us forward as we read. But it's not just about the action and the spectacle. Mark is very carefully crafting a portrait of Jesus, revealing his true identity and purpose.
And, you know, one of the things that struck me most was Mark's emphasis on Jesus's authority. It's there from the very beginning when John the Baptist calls him the stronger one,
right.
You know, and then we see it again and again in his teaching and his exorcisms and his healing touch. It's like Mark is saying, you know, this is no ordinary rabbi. This is someone with power unlike anything you've ever seen.
That's right. And those connections that Mark makes to the Old Testament prophecies, they just reinforce that idea.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus, he isn't just some random miracle worker. He's fulfilling God's plan, a plan that's been in motion for centuries.
You know, I used to think those Old Testament references were kind of confusing, but now I see how they add like this whole other layer of meaning to Jesus's actions. Like, remember how we talked about the tearing of the heavens at Jesus's baptism? That wasn't just some random special effect.
Right, right. That was Mark's way of foreshadowing the tearing of the temple veil at the crucifixion. He's using that imagery to symbolize the breaking down of barriers between humanity and God. It's a powerful visual. It really sticks with you.
It does. It does. And it makes me think about how carefully Mark chooses, like, every word, every image, like that detail about the wild animals being with Jesus in the wilderness. What was that all about?
Yeah. That's one of those passages that sparks all sorts of different interpretations. On one level, it could just be a simple demonstration of Jesus's power over nature. But on a deeper level, it might be hinting at something even more profound.
Like what?
Well, some scholars suggest it symbolizes a return to the harmony of Eden. Remember in the creation story how Adam had dominion over all the animals? Well, maybe Mark is suggesting that Jesus, as the second Adam, is restoring that broken relationship between humanity and creation.
Oh, that's a beautiful image. And it makes me think about how, you know, Jesus's mission isn't just about individual salvation. It's about healing the whole world, bringing wholeness and peace to every corner of creation. It's a much bigger vision than I ever imagined.
You're getting it. And that's what makes Mark's gospel so compelling. It's not just a collection of stories or moral teachings. It's an invitation to see the world differently, to experience the transformative power of God's kingdom breaking in.
I love that. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you'd want our listeners to take away from Mark's prologue?
I think the most important takeaway is that Jesus is a game changer. He's not just another prophet or teacher. He's the one who fulfills God's promises, who breaks down barriers, who confronts evil, who heals the sick, and who offers us a radically new way of being in the world.
Beautifully said. And as we, you know, sort of finish up our deep dive into the Gospel of Mark, and you should, by the way, because it only gets more intense from here, just keep that in mind. pay attention to the way Jesus challenges our assumptions, disrupts the status quo, and invites us to see the world through the lens of God's kingdom. You might be surprised by what you discover about yourself along the way.
Absolutely. This deep dive was just a taste, a glimpse into the richness of Mark's gospel. Keep reading, keep questioning, and keep allowing yourself to be challenged and transformed by the story he tells.